Michigan's Upper Peninsula is my home and Escanaba is my hometown. I'm Craig Warple. Hometown Escanaba connects with the people, activities, and newsmakers of Escanaba and the UP. Join us for more interviews at hometownescanaba.com. Now let's find out what's going on. Stephen Davis is joining us from the Delta County Historical Society. He is going to be putting on a presentation this coming Wednesday Bay College. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, if you want to draw people in, you title your session like this, Death at the Castle on the Shore. How does that have anything to do with Escanaba?
It has little to do with Escanaba. It has everything to do with Delta County.
Ah.
In 1859, on June 18th, there was a homicide, if you will, over in Seshwa Point. Now, Seshwa Point is far, far distant from Delta County at this time. But in 1859, it was the eastern end of Delta County. At that time, Delta County started maybe 2 or 3 miles to the east of Seshwa Point, ran across to the west all the way to the Wisconsin border, down the Menominee River, and then back through what is now Delta County all the way back to Seshwa Point.
And because, which is east of Manistee.
Which is east, well east of Manistee, mm-hmm. near Gulliver, south of Gulliver.
Was the lighthouse there?
No, there was no lighthouse there. There was nothing there. And the shape of the county at that time is what gives its county its name. It was in the Greek form of the Greek letter Delta, and that's how we got our name. Mm-hmm. And over time, bits and parts of it were peeled off, and the essence of it right now is, as we know, is Delta County. But at the time, in 1859, Delta County was a designated county, but it was not organized. It didn't become organized until 1861. So there was a homicide at Seshwa Point, and it was a temporary fishing village at the time, every summer, and it happened at that point.
Every fishing village has a castle?
Well, no, it doesn't. But keep in mind that a man's home is his castle, and that's where the castle comes from.
Sure.
Now, in this particular case, it was owned a small building and an outbuilding. It was owned by a man named Augustus Pond, P-O-N-D. And Mr. Pond, on that morning, was having his outbuilding torn apart by three people. And they were ripping the roof off the outbuilding. They were inside this outbuilding. He had a hired hand who was being choked by one of these three people who were ripping the building apart. In the early, very early morning hours of a moonlit night, Mr. Pond opened the door, yelled, "Who's tearing my building? Who's tearing my building? Leave or I'll shoot. Leave or I will shoot." And he did shoot. And he hit one of them. And the man that he hit, Isaac Blanchard Jr., was a large man. He was 6'7".
Whoa.
He weighed 240 pounds, and he was reputed to be one of the strongest people in the area. And he and, as I said, two others were ripping the building apart. Mr. Pond had a shotgun. It was loaded with birdshot. It was a double-barrel shotgun. He shot one of the barrels. It hit the man. The man ran off into the woods and died about 200 feet away from what was going on.
Was there a conviction in any of this?
Yes. But before that happened, Mr. Pond had his two hired hands try to row him 25 miles across the lake to Beaver Island because he wasn't going to turn himself in to anybody there in Seshwa Point, a little fishing village. And he didn't make it all the way. In fact, his pursuers got him about 7 miles short of making it to Beaver Island. And the reason he was heading off to Beaver Island is that the man that he hit, the 6'7" guy, his father, Isaac Blanchard Sr., was the justice of the peace on Mackinac Island. He had just killed the judge's son.
Oh, my. How is this not a book and a movie, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to craft the movie. Anyway, he was taken back to Mackinac Island because at that time, Delta County was not a county as we think of it now. It didn't have a judge. It didn't have anybody. There was only 1,170 people living in Delta County, that huge county at the time, in the 1860 census. So he was taken back to Mackinac Island, where he was tried, and he was tried by a jury of 12. He was tried on a charge of open murder, which means that they could find him first degree, second degree, involuntary manslaughter, voluntary manslaughter. He was convicted of manslaughter, and he was sentenced to 10 years at hard labor in the Michigan Penitentiary down at Jackson, Michigan.
You, in a former life, were a judge.
I was.
Would you have litigated it that way? Would it have had the same outcome?
I don't know, but we're inviting everybody to come to the Historical Society
event this Wednesday.
Event, yes, because we're going to swear them in as the jury. And here's why we're swearing them in as a jury. Because the case was to be retried. It went before the Michigan Supreme Court, which at that time, believe it or not, was only 4 members. They didn't have an odd number. They didn't have 3, 5, 7. They had no way to resolve ties. So they had 4 members, and on May 12, 1860, the Supreme Court reversed the conviction. And we're going to cover that when we get there on Wednesday. Why did they reverse the conviction? Because they established once and for all the man's home is his castle doctrine, the castle doctrine. That also was a beginning of the stand your ground approach. The right to shoot somebody who might be attacking your castle. And where was this castle? This castle was on the shore of Lake Michigan at Sheshewa Point. And so when they reversed the conviction, Mr. Pond, who was then about 35 years old, he was sent back to be retried. But before he could be retried, he died. He died in 1864. And so this case has never been retried until this coming Wednesday.
Wow.
And the reason it was supposed to be retried by Delta County was because that's where the murder happened.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1859, we were attached to Mackinac County for judicial purposes, and that's why it has to be happening here.
You're going to give us the verdict after this Wednesday to find out what people say?
Yes, if okay. You'd like.
Yeah.
We certainly can do that. We have a strong idea of what the verdict is going to be. It turns out there's a number of people in the local area that have relatives that were either directly involved in the event or served as witnesses. So we expect to, once we start revealing all the names of the people who lived in that community at the time, we're going to find others who are out there that can trace their lineage back to these people here.
What a history.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Huh.
The reason we chose this one is because it established a law for the state of Michigan. It's been that way for 160 years. And a lot of other states in the U.S. picked up the logic and holding in this particular case and have established it. So that's why it's titled Death at the Castle on the Beach.
If I remember right, I thought that you were justified only if they were in the castle.
Ah, so we have to define the castle now, don't we?
Okay.
And this is what this case did. It expanded the size of the castle. Now, his actual castle, if you will, was only 16 by 16. His family was inside the castle, and he had been harassed by these 3 individuals for at least 2 days before this. They were seeking him out. They had punched him, kicked him, threatened to throw rocks at him, threatened to invade his home, actually stuck their hands in through his door. His wife had fainted inside the house, and he had this small boathouse outside, or it was called a net house. And they were ripping this off. And remember, this was in the early dawn, very early dawn, in a full moon. And the net house was only 36 feet away from the actual house. And we are able to get our hands on a crime scene photo. We have actual photo. Yes. Somebody had to be out in that lake at some time. And it shows not only Mr. Pond's house, it also shows the net house. And it shows the net house leaning because they were tearing it apart. They took the roof off, they took the sides off, and so you can see the whole thing. So somebody had to be coming there to take this photograph, which we now have.
Do you know the reason behind the harassment?
No. It's not, Mr. Pond was a very mild-mannered man. He took this harassment. They knocked his hat off. They punched him in the face. They kicked him in the chest. At least one of them did. It was just some sort of quasi-ethnic thing going on.
Bullying thing?
Yeah, it was definitely a bullying level thing. Right. These three were considered the bullies of this whole area. And like I said, it was a temporary summer village. It extended about at least a mile of single road housing, all that looked like Mr. Pond's house. One window, one door, 16 by 16, and that was it. But they would come up there, seasonably, they would come from Mackinac Island, they would come from St. Ignace, they would come from Beaver Island, and they would fish in that area because it was one of the prime fishing areas in the country. And the traders would come through there, pick up the fish, take them down to the other markets, and drop off a lot of liquor. Mm. And liquor has a prominent place in this tale.
What was it like for you to do the research on this?
Oh, my. It was so much fun. It was really a lot of fun. And I'm not plowing new ground here. We are very thankful to the Gulliver Historical Society. They have books and pamphlets that you can get on this. There are a lot of articles that have written about this. I visited the grave sites where these people are buried. They're all buried over in the St. Ignace area. And it was just, for me, it was just fascinating to do this. And it combined the three things that are of great interest to me: history, the law, and Delta County.
You often take a look at cases because of your previous position. Was this different or was it similar?
It was different in that the way they handled cases back in the 1860s, the way they wrote their opinions are so totally different than what we have now. It gives a very detailed history of what happened on the 3 days involving the event. 2 days before, the bullying, the day before, the bullying, Mr. Pond's going and get the double-barrel shotgun. It covers the chase itself. It covers the trial. It tells us who was the witnesses at the trial. And then we also had some of the actual docket entries, which were all given in longhand. They didn't have typewriters, obviously, in those days. But the opinion itself, of course, is in print. But I looked at the docket entries and found some very interesting things in there that we will reveal on Wednesday.
You're looking forward to the presentation here this coming Wednesday?
I am, for two reasons. One, I really enjoy it, and two, so it's over with. Because it's a huge time investment, and yeah, there's always stress. I mean, like, every waking thought now is devoted to how this presentation is going to go. What am I going to include? How am I going to handle it?
Well, when you're also asking the audience to participate, you don't know where it's going to go, right?
We don't know where it's going to go. But one of the mysteries to me, the whole thing is, why was this case never tried? The event happened on June 18th. By August 30th, the same year, what is that, about maybe 73 days? They're in trial. He's convicted on August 7th. He's sent away. They turn this thing around in May of 1860. The guy lives until 1864, and why was he not retried? And I don't know, and all the literature I had never really covers why he was not retried and why he died before his retrial, but I think I've discovered the answer.
Because of the power of the family?
Oh, no. I don't think it has anything to do with the power of the family. He was scared. I mean, because he knew he was going to get tried back.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And the family on Mackinac Island.
Yeah, but he goes back to Mackinac Island, and he dies on Mackinac Island.
From?
It's Mr. Pond. He lived on Mackinac Island before this whole event happened.
Yeah.
But he went back there, and it was literally about 4.5 years when he died. Why was he not tried in those 4.5 years? Why? And I think I've discovered the answer.
Okay, so that'll be the surprise
the
then
big
on
reveal.
Wednesday. All right,
yeah.
Very good. Stephen Davis is going to be presenting Death at the Castle on the Shore. It's a history of Delta County, certainly the Upper Peninsula here, a story we've probably not heard of very often. And you get to play the part of jury as in the retrial as well. So make sure you join Stephen over at the Bay College Herman Center beginning at 7 p.m. on Wednesday.
Oh, no pancakes, but no cost.
No cost. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the event.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. A special thanks to our sponsor, SwedishPimple.com. Check out all of the fishing lures made right here in the Upper Peninsula at SwedishPimple.com. You can continue to follow us at HometownEscanaba.com. We connect with the people, activities, and newsmakers from Escanaba and Michigan's Upper Peninsula.